Welcome back. It's time for Bain and Woods and the City Paper. Bain, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Oh, yeah. Great to be here, Mark. How you doing?
I'm well, man. How are you?
Doing great.
So, where do we begin? Shall we begin with this? What the piece you're writing in this paper, at least I think it's in this issue, right? What happened in the demonstrations you were following?
So that was a follow-up. It was online. But
it was online. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, because the time, it was the demonstration Saturday, so it couldn't make it into the paper. But, it was really fascinating to go to. There was the National March in Washington on Saturday also. So I think it was a bit smaller here. But it did turn out to be about, I think, I'm not the best estimator, but probably about 300 people at occupying MLK Boulevard and shutting it off for, I don't know, somewhere over 30 minutes. And it was really interesting to see as they then moved from there and tactically they were trying to get down to the stadium and ultimately the casino, and the police were really trying to stop them from getting to M&T because there was the Army-Navy game going on there. And so a lot of really interesting things happened that I think marked a bit of a change in the relationship between the demonstrators and the department as they tried tactically to each run and to take streets. It was really a tactical strategy. It ended up at about 7 o'clock when there were far fewer protesters by this point. The police declared, and I've been trying to ask them what changed at that moment, but through the Fox chopper flying overhead, declared that it was an illegal assembly at that point. Rather than Batts has been consistently saying that he's going to help the protesters exercise their First Amendment rights. And so then what law is it that is keeping them at that point from exercising their First Amendment rights that caused them to disperse? I talked to one woman who said that she was elbow or shouldered, hit in the face with the shoulder by a police officer.
Right.
A number of other people were making allegations like that. Previously, the Baltimore Block had sent me photographs of at one of the West Wednesday protests of police walking with batons out. And so and I asked Batts about that because he had told me that, he didn't support things like that. And so he said he couldn't quite see the picture. It was on my phone when we were standing out and it was bright. But he did say that he had ordered, and this would be something interesting to look into also, what the cost and stuff are, but that he had ordered new kinds of batons and a new kind of sheath because he didn't like them swinging around, and talked about how a lot of officers sort of swing them in a way that can seem intimidating, but to them is just sort of, it's this thing they have that they kind of play with. So, that all then comes up the next day with Batts's comments when the officer was shot and entirely unrelated event and the traffic stop for suspecting marijuana smell, that wondering if the people would come out and protest the officer being shot in the same way they were protesting people dying in police custody, which then really has had a lot of social media outcry that he really doesn't understand what this is about, because certainly that the person accused of shooting the officer will certainly be indicted. And so it's a different kind of issue to protest. So and then during all of this, the Suns, Ian Duncan, was tweeting the police scanner, letting people know what the police were going to be doing. And they publicly reprimanded him via Twitter in a post that's since been taken down, saying that they had told him not to tweet the location. Well, they were then also tweeting the location of the activists. So we're going to have a piece next week in the paper sort of looking at the social media world of how these protests are playing out beyond just on the ground, but playing out online. And my piece yesterday was sort of a prelude to that story.
So we'll probably jump right into the issue here. I'm going to tell you, we did talk to the police about this issue, and this is the response we got from them. I'll read it to you and to the rest of our listeners. From Sarah Conley in the police department. She said, "Before every march, we have distributed leaflets with information about lawful protesting, including not blocking streets. That particular march received a number of warnings to vacate intersections. The Baltimore Police Department remains committed to ensuring the safe exercise of everyone's constitutional rights." So that was their response to us.
Interesting. That's great. They haven't sent me that yet. But I mean, so they had allowed people to block streets all day. So that still is it really is a something that would be a great conversation to have is when and I mean, what it looked like is the only thing that had changed at that point was there were fewer protesters and fewer press from the ground. That's what it looked like changed between, you know, certainly blocking MLK is a much bigger thing than blocking North and you know, blocking MLK in the middle of the afternoon than blocking North and Calvert. At that time of day, were there a number of other streets running parallel, but it was fewer protesters. And so it was really, and it was way more tense, and there were a lot more police than protesters at that point.
So let's go to the issue.
Yeah, so this is our top 10 issue, and we do, you know, the sort of obligatory media thing every year. We you know, really have to be gluttons for all things cultural and go through and look at what really stuck with us over the course of the year. And one thing that I really am proud about on this issue is our cover, which was done by a MICA student, Devin Bragg, who we worked with Alex Fine, one of our longtime illustrators, class at MICA, where they each submitted sketches. They came in and talked to us about the issue. They submitted sketches. They submitted final drawings. You can see them all online. But this is really captures the way it felt with this drawing of a giant mouth eating this sandwich filled with all sorts of cultural things. And it feels very like a gluttonous time of year for us on culture, going back and listening to all the records that you may have missed, revisiting the news stories that you may have missed. And so I really encourage you to check out these lists. You can check them out in the paper and online. But we also had a couple other, and we can come back and talk about that. But one of the really interesting stories we have this week is Van Smith went in and looked at
right.
how bookings and central booking have changed since from prior to October when they decriminalized marijuana to after. And he's finding that it's really a huge difference, that the number of African Americans specifically arrested on drug charges in October, which is 647, is half of the number from last October, which was 1,272. And so it really, and that the age of arrestees is going up, and therefore also the percentage of white people being arrested for drug crimes has gone up. At the same time that, because that was one of the reasons for changing the law, is that it was very, you know, in what the ACLU called the new Jim Crow. And then the Sun followed up with that the number of African-American, especially young men being arrested on marijuana charges was so disproportionate. And so it really seems to have made a tremendous difference in what's happening in the city. So I think that's a really important story.
It makes me think that, you know, one little step to make people a little bit more sane about drugs and drug laws in this country, if we went even further, how much difference that could really make for us.
Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating because this charge, you know, this incident with the officer on Sunday was that they suspected they smelled marijuana. And so it brings up some of the other questions of where do you start in enforcing this kind of stuff and where do you stop? So, yeah, if it went further and it were actually illegal, then what would happen?
So there was some other pieces in this piece. It's a really interesting little piece I read that before we went on the air that Edward Erickson wrote.
I mean,
it's not a huge piece, but it's interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing about how difficult it is for the council to be able to change parking regulations in the city, and how numerous council people have gone over the years have kept, due to constituent complaints, have tried to change. And especially in Roland Park, the case right now, people are getting tickets for parking up on the curb so that there's still enough room on the streets and for parking going in the wrong way. And numerous council people have said, oh, it's going to take an act of Congress to change this. So it's fascinating look at how intractable these sort of issues can be, but also that, like, one reason they're intractable is that they're really rather minor issues. The woman that Ed goes and visits has, they all have garages in their back, but don't like to use the garages in the alley and just prefer to park this way. And so, you know, it is one of these sort of almost talk of the towny kind of New Yorker type things that just really shows a little sort of slice of the city and people's complaints and then the council's difficulty of dealing with those.
So tell me what your favorite parts of this issue are. This top 10.
Well, so the top 10, I think it's one of the great things about it is just how packed it is. I mean, the book section, we have our top 10 local books, you know, which John Waters with his book on hitchhiking this year came out at the top of. But then we have top 10 fiction, top 10 nonfiction. And we reach out to all our freelance writers and ask them what was really. And so one of the great things is finding out about books that you missed over the course of the year. So one of the books that I knew nothing about that seems just really fascinating is one from Brett McCabe called A Brief History of Seven Killings by Marlon James. And it's this book that takes a Rashomon-type view of all these different people's perspectives and what they were happening in Jamaica in the moment in 1976 when there was the assassination attempt on Bob Marley. And it goes through, it has CIA agents, it has various people who just are living in the slums in Kingston. It has all different social elements. And so that's one that I can't wait to read. And others that were favorites that I was glad to see that other people voted for as well, like Roxane Gay's Bad Feminist, which made the top of our nonfiction book. And then we ask in the music, we ask all of our columnists over the course of, so we have a experts in each genre of music who every couple months write a column on that. And we're hoping to get them starting doing that online every week or every other week or something so that that's more common. But so they each gave for their various genres for country or rap or Baltimore Club, what their top music, their top releases in the course of the year are. And so it's really been great to, I've been just especially listening only to local music, as we've talked about a number of times with me right now, to be able to go through and listen to all of the best new club releases or the best new country releases or the best, and to really know that people are on the top of it for every year. And then I did, this wasn't even due to my vote, but my favorite restaurant in town, Puerto 511, the new very, very small Peruvian place that we've talked about before, that you have to have reservations, but that ended up at the top of our list, which I was glad to see. And even the mayor, she went there for her anniversary dinner this year, I saw. Sometimes feel like she's following me around as much as I'm following her around.
Well, next you'll have dinner together.
Well, I'm hoping. Mayor, I'd love to have dinner with you. I'll pay. Maybe, and I'd love to have dinner. I've been talking with Bats a lot he's been really friendly. He comes up to me, and so I'd love to have a dinner with the mayor and Bats. And, you know, she might not be able to take me up on my challenge that I made a little while ago to smoke a little weed with me if Bats comes along, but that'd be all right. We could still hang out.
Ben Woods, senior editor of the Baltimore City paper. Always good to talk to you. Pull it out of the box. They're all over the city. Worth the read. Thanks, Baynard.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
Take care,
talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye. So that is the Mark Steiner Show for today. On our way out of here, we're going to hear Rockbox by Run DMC. The self-titled album became the first hip-hop record to go gold on this day in 1985. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineers, Andre Melton. Our intern is Sienna Greaves. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. If you hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, find out information about our guests and what we talked about on the air, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. You can also listen to and download all of our podcasts on iTunes. For Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.